You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week we have, once again, not one, but two guests, Ekaterina Walter and Jessica Jolio. Ekaterina is a globally recognized business and marketing innovator, international speaker, and author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller Think Like Zuck, and co-author of The Power of Visual Storytelling. After pioneering social media and digital marketing strategies for Fortune 500 brands such as Intel and Accenture, she co-founded a startup that was acquired by Sprinklr, a customer experience management platform where she served as global evangelist. She now helps global organizations build customer-centric digital transformation strategies. Ekaterina's leadership has been featured on CNBC, ABC, NBC, Fox News, Forbes, Fast Company, TechCrunch, CNN, Wall Street Journal, Inc., and Huffington Post, among others. She's been consistently recognized by the industry and her peers for her innovative thinking. She was number 3 on Forbes World's Top 40 Social Marketing Talent, and Fortune Magazine included her on a list of most impactful business people on social media alongside Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, Arianna Huffington, Warren Buffett, and others. When Ekaterina is not writing about digital and business innovation, she and her 9-year-old daughter co-author children's books. The first of a planned series, Amber and Sapphire, The Magic Spell, was published in 2017. Jessica Jolio is a recognized digital and social business strategist and the co-author of The Power of Visual Storytelling. She has spent over a decade leading transformation marketing, public relations, and social media programs for best-in-class companies including Dunkin' Donuts, TripAdvisor, State Street, Comcast, and Sprinklr. From advising top companies on social media and digital business transformation to leading an award-winning public relations and social media program for Dunkin' Donuts or providing disruptive communications programs for TripAdvisor, Jessica thrives on delivering customer-centric innovation and growth acceleration. A recognized thought leader and sought-after speaker, Jessica was named one of the top marketing leaders to follow by LinkedIn, HubSpot, Top Rank Online Marketing, and the United Kingdom's We Are the City. Jessica's thought leadership and industry commentary has been featured on CNBC, USA Today, PR Week, Computer World, Chief Marketer, and more. I'd like to welcome both of you to the On Brand podcast.
Thanks for having us, Nick. Great to be here.
Yes, thank you, Nick. It's such a delight to be here speaking with you.
I am glad to be chatting with you both. And within the bios there, it was mentioned for savvy listeners that you're both co-authors of The Power of Visual Storytelling, and your latest collaboration together once again is The Laws of Brand Storytelling. So I think that folks are used to hearing a lot about story, but what is the connection with story and brand building?
Well, I can take that one, Jess. I think, you know, Nick, let's dive right in and talk about how different the definition of brand storytelling actually is nowadays, right? You know, in our book, Jess and I we sort of have this philosophy. We started with this philosophy that when you think about brand storytelling, you think marketing, right? You automatically think marketing, commercial, you know, and then people basically equate nowadays the word content with storytelling. Well, I create a lot of content. I create great content. Yeah. So that was sort of like storytelling 1.0, right? Content and storytelling is just the sexy word for the same thing. Now, storytelling 2.0 was, oh, you know what? We actually need to become smarter because it's a two-way conversation, because people, there's so many competitive products and people don't pay attention anymore. Let's look at ways to really connect to people's hearts, not just people's minds, right? So let's look at creating content that actually appeals to folks around not just our products, but around our purpose, what we stand for, something to really have a common connection with the consumer. And then also, you know, tell stories. Finally, right? We started telling stories of our customers, potentially in some cases employees, which are even more powerful. I think, you know, when we wrote the book, Jess and I, we ascertained that the storytelling is now a totally different thing. It sort of evolved into 3.0, if you will, very simply put. And that is, storytelling isn't just for marketers anymore. It isn't just for PR professionals. It isn't for shiny commercials. It is for everybody in the company. Storytelling is shifting because your brand is now what people say, and the way they perceive your brand is across all your touch points. Yes, they might see a tearjerker of a commercial, but then they go into your store and they get a horrible customer service, and then they try to get you on the phone and you're not there, you're not helping them, your product is breaking, your service is breaking. And so what brand building and a lot of times brand storytelling is how that story evolves for that customer at that particular point, from starting to engage with your brand to purchasing to the service post purchase, and it's just that whole journey, right? So when we look at it and we build out our strategy in our book on how to do the brand storytelling right now in this digital world, we'll look at it from a broader perspective than just, you know, this book is for marketers and this is how you actually should tell your stories. Jess, do you have anything to add?
No, I think you summed that up brilliantly, Ekaterina. I completely agree and believe it's we've seen that dramatic shift from just viewing brand storytelling in kind of a marketing space to really viewing it in a customer experience space. And as a result, the transformation we've seen is really every kind of department across the organization really needs to embrace kind of the power of storytelling and customer experience you can create.
Well, I think that definition is key, because I think that's what I hear when I'm talking about it a lot. You talk about story, and then the follow-up is, well, is it marketing? And then even more tactically, okay, is like my story what you're saying? Is that a slogan? Is that a script of a commercial? What is that? Is it the content? So I think kind of broadening that while at the same time focusing is key as well.
Absolutely. And you know, it's all about connections, right? So if you really look at your customer journey, and I'll tell you, you know, nowadays, and people will argue, well, you know, now you're taking too broad of a stance on that, right? And it's you know, it's fantastic and it's shiny, but it's hard to implement. I've seen companies implement it. So, you know, sales right now are in some of the top brands to look at redefining how they actually connect with their customers and serve their customers. You know, sales right now working very closely with marketing, because the stories salespeople tell to their prospects matters. And stories, not pushing your product to begin with, but connecting with customers. Social communities and just communities, they don't have to be specifically on social media, right? But for people in customer care and sales, and connecting with customers on those communities where they are and really actually building a sense of belonging versus, again, pushing their product, right? Then PR right now is continuing to really truly shift from, well, here's my press release, to, hey, here's a video that does so much better, that really explains what we're trying to do and who we're as a company, right? And it's marketing shifting to overall to let's figure out what our customers want to see. Let's be inspirational with some of the content, but utilitarian as well. Because a lot of times when customers come look for something, they look for how to do something, how to fix something, how to connect with me on a meaningful level, right? So it's hard to do, absolutely, because companies are naturally so siloed, but we see companies do that quite successfully. And you know, it's not about your marketing stuff anymore. It's not about your message anymore. It's about your actions, right? Literally, storytelling is moving from words to actions. You know, we talk a lot in our book, and just feel free to add to that, right? But we talk a lot, and we are both extremely passionate about, hey, you need to stop being Switzerland, right? Jess used to say, that's what she used to say when she goes and speaks, right? She says, yeah, stop being Switzerland, right? And you're not sidewalks. Don't let people walk all over you. And what she means is a lot of companies now, the way their brand is perceived is not based on their messaging, but based on the stance they take. So take a stance for the issues that really truly align with who they are, who you are as a brand, right, Jess?
Absolutely, yeah. And we do have some great insights actually on that. You know, brands essentially have more to lose by staying silent than they do speaking out. We found some great research from Sprout Social on championing change in the age of social media. And it actually reveals that customers really do want brands to understand a company's stance on the issues that are important to them. So Sprout Social's research reveals that 2/3 of customers say it's important for brands to take a public stance on social and political issues, while 58% are open to hearing about a company's stance on social media. So customers are asking for this. And if you look at some of the companies like Tom's or Airbnb or Patagonia, it's easy to see, you know, the power and the opportunity to differentiate your brand by taking a stance for what you believe in. However, I think the risk that companies run is the stance needs to be genuine, and it needs to be kind of ingrained in their values, who they stand for, and kind of how they run their business. So again, going back to connecting that conversation about, you know, why storytelling needs to span across the business is because it needs to be ingrained in all of those business operations in order to kind of come to the front and be core to the brand and the story that you tell.
Well, and I think that that connects back to what you were saying too about this being something that is beyond marketing, because that is, I mean, you can't really graft a stance onto your brand. It has to come from a very genuine place. And I think that that is very different and very scary, because I think what preceded the age that we find ourselves in with the and that Sprout data, what came first was that really having any sort of a stance was kind of the third rail that you never wanted to grab onto. It was it used to be that you wanted to be Switzerland, but that's not what customers are looking for.
That's right.
I've worked for so many companies, Nick, and continue to kind of work with them through some that I now work with. And there's still very much a fear of kind of standing out and kind of, you know, kind of putting the brand somewhere that they shouldn't. So, you know, really in the book, we actually go through kind of the process and the approach companies should take to really understand kind of what those issues are and areas where they would take a stand. So it's not just do it for the sake of doing it, but here's kind of all the things you should be looking at within your company and your brand and your values to really help you and your customers as well, right? To help you kind of, you know, feel more empowered to kind of go there and be kind of confident in that stance.
Yep. I think, Nick, when I walk into the boardrooms, right, and work with executives, I see two things. What Jess said is absolute fear. It doesn't look like fear, but it is. It's an underlying fear of, I'm not going to be one of the ones to stand out and hope, you know, and drag the company into a beast, right? So that's one. But the second one is pure excitement, which is, okay, great, fantastic. That is great to hear. We're thinking the same thing. Now, how do I go do it? And so what Jess touched it is, that's exactly what we did. It's interesting, because our previous book, The Power of Visual Storytelling, meaning moving from just, you know, moving into sort of the visual, snackable, quick, interesting, fun way to engage your customers and grab their attention, it's done extremely well. But people did ask for a follow-up of, okay, well, now tell us more. You kind of tell us how to do sort of the visual part, but what do we do if we want to look at the bigger brand story, and how do we do it? So we literally have a framework in the book that goes from, you know, the knowing who you are to understanding your goals, and actually outlining a lot of strategic frameworks that we never published anywhere else. So they're proprietary. So from, you know, knowing who you are, understanding your goals, then finding your story, then crafting it and sharing it, and then engaging with your communities in a meaningful way. And the reality is we give a lot of things that you can just plug and play, like you can plug in your stuff in, and also a ton of examples that you can use and draw inspiration from and say, well, ooh, that actually reminds me, but what if we do this in our brand? So that's what we're targeting with the book.
Cool. Jessica, you'd mentioned in talking about the Switzerland thing, about knowing where your brand might be able to stand out more by having a stance. You talked about an approach and walking through. Is there a 1,000-foot-up snapshot of that approach of what's important to consider? Because I'm sure there's many listening that really don't even know how to start that conversation.
Absolutely. You know, one thing that we recommend in the book that's also something that we've come up with is it's important to align your advocacy with an authenticity playbook. So, you know, really that comes from having a deep understanding of where your company stands on issues of importance to your business and to your customers. So we actually walk through kind of from delving into who you are to your purpose, your brand values, what are the key differentiators on your business? We talk about what it takes to actually develop an authenticity playbook, because here's the thing is every company has brand guidelines, right? You know, about how your logo's treated, mm-hmm. about your tone of voice, and, you know, a lot more kind of stylistic, visual, kind of video type of guidelines. But where companies don't always have guidelines is around kind of the issues and what the brand, you know, around kind of where the brand goes in terms of a value standpoint. You know, companies will have company values and a mission statement, but we're talking about taking that a step further. And really, instead of saying, you know, we want to be a human brand and we want to be kind of, you know, we want to be a values-led business. Well, what does that truly mean? And how do you dig in? So that's really what we walk people through in the book. And we share some great examples from companies like GE and Reese's on how they've kind of done that within their business.
I was just going to say that you kind of read my mind. What are some of the examples that you point to in how something like this is happening in a way that's having an impact?
Absolutely. Do you want me to take that, Katrina, or would you like to jump in?
Sure, that's fine. Go ahead. I'll jump in. I'll jump in afterwards. No worries.
Dynamic duo here.
There you go.
So, you know, really where one of the examples that we share in terms of authenticity is we share a great example from GE, who's really kind of taken a stance. So the thing is, taking a stance isn't always about something controversial, right? It could actually be about something that they feel is kind of a societal issue. And GE has done an amazing stance around balancing the equation. So they've actually done an incredible mission of saying they want to have 50-50 representation for women in STEM roles. And for those not familiar, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And they want to have 20,000 women in STEM roles by 2020. And what I thought was amazing about how they actually made that stance is it wasn't just, hey, we're going to do a campaign and announce this. They actually came up with an incredibly thorough white paper. And they worked with other kind of key partners in the industry to put together research to show that companies like GE cannot continue to innovate at their current rate if they don't balance the gender equation in STEM. So I thought that was hugely brilliant, because you go to see how you can look at it from more of a public relations, investor relations, and really kind of have facts and figures to tell that story. But then they also did kind of an overarching kind of brand awareness and consumer story, where they said, what if we treated great female scientists like they were celebrities? And they actually cast this amazing woman named Millie Dresselhaus. So Millie Dresselhaus is featured in this campaign as if she were a Kardashian. And people, paparazzi are following her on the street. She's on the cover of magazines. She's live tweeting, you know, her speech at conferences. There's Barbie dolls modeled after her. And the message is we need to celebrate the accomplishments of these types of women if we want to kind of, you know, empower and inspire more women to go into this field. So I think it's a great example of taking a stance. But we've also talked, you know, about a couple other ways you can do it, too, is, you know, when kind of consumers come after you for a specific question or maybe a crisis situation. We also go into, you know, other ways around, you know, issues around, you know, Honey Maid did an amazing campaign called This Is Wholesome that talks about what a wholesome family means and the different types of families, which is quite controversial. Or it could be on other issues of the day. So we cover so many of those kind of nuances as a way to kind of inspire brand leaders to think about, well, which of these types of issues would my company want to take a stance on, and which is a fit based on my products, my business, you know, how we run our day-to-day operations, as well as what our customers care about.
I love that example because it is, like you said, it goes beyond lip service. It's also very specific. And I mean, I think so many times, that's a big point of differentiation, because a lot of times you want to have a positive message, but it runs the risk of being somewhat generic. I mean, they are have set benchmarks that they want to hit, and I think that's kind of amazing.
Well, and there's really radical examples like Nike. Let's talk about latest, right? Nike and Colin Kaepernick campaign, right, where people were burning shoes and they were disagreeing, and there's all this hoo-ha online. And the reality is the stock temporarily dipped, but Nike is a strong brand. They know who they are. They know what they stand for. They know what they want to stand for in the world, you know, in the future world where young people growing up. And so, you know, they've done it very deliberately. And not only now their online sales jumped despite the 3% hit that Nike took on its stock after announcing the campaign, right, immediately after they announced it, but the product orders rose 27%. The stock is way back up, and so, you know, you look at that and you know that you might be hit, and you plan for the fact that you might be hit in the short term, but in the long term, you are very confident and you're very solid with who you are and where you stand, and you make that decision consciously. And you know, interestingly, we listened to interviews that executives did around the Wholesome campaign, right, that Jessica mentioned. And Honey Maid did it brilliantly. They actually planned ahead so well. They knew that there's going to be controversy, and they said, "Who we are, what we want to stand for, and are we ready to fight this good fight?" And everybody in the company aligned, and they did, right. And but what's brilliant though, right, Nick, is not that they responded in a strange way, or they put out another press release, and or they wavered. You know, the brilliance of it was their response, right? When they took all of the data, right, all of the responses around the internet to their campaign, bad and good, and they responded with this amazing touching video where they stacked up all those responses, right? And they made the word love out of the negative responses, but then the positive were 10x more than the negative. And they just put it out there. They put that video out there as a response. And by the way, video response is such an underutilized medium. But they put it out there and said, again, this is our response, and this is who we are. We stand for love. We're not going to fight. We're not going to argue. That is who we are. And I mean, just the brilliance of it, but also the boldness, right? Companies cannot afford to be in the middle anymore. They got to be bold.
Well, and there's something else with the execution, with the implementation there, that when you are being bold, I like the examples that you cited, because in many cases they knew this is gonna make some noise. It's gonna have it's gonna rock the boat a bit, and being ready for that and being kind of bolstered in advance for it. Because I think the other thing you see from time to time is someone kind of try something, but they've got a very foot in the water approach, and then oh no, we didn't mean that, and quick reversal and kind of dodging a bit, and just kind of messy in their commitment and execution.
That's right. I mean, talk about the lack of respect of ourselves and the lack of the loss of respect from our customers. I mean, there is certain things that you can play with, technologies you can try and play with, but once you're in this particular area, right? Once you try to take a stand, hopefully there's no try, right? But like once you take a stand, you stick with it because there's no reversing. Like you got to decide for yourself ahead of time, and that's where silos come in, Nick. Right? Quite honestly, I mean, Jess and I both worked for huge companies, huge global companies, and the reality is everything is siloed. Somebody in the silo made a decision. The executives are not aligned. One executive loves it, another one freaks out, and so that's where it comes from. The reality is most of it is driven not by unified strategy. That's a thing.
Exactly. And I also think a lack of understanding of customers too, right? Because we have so many examples in the book, not just, kind of taking a stance on an issue, but just campaigns brands have run where, you know, they wanted to project a specific image of how they want to be known or kind of how they want to be perceived by customers. And it's not actually authentic and ingrained in customer insights. So, you know, when you kind of take the silos from the business side and then you add maybe lack of kind of doing the diligence on the customer insight side, it really is a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, it is hard to believe, but we are almost out of time. It flies when we have two guests, but I wanted to be sure to ask you both for a brand that has made you smile recently. Ekaterina, do you
I'll take
one?
That, sure. Gosh, there's few, but there's few really good ones. I'll give you the one we're actually not using in the book. and it's one of my, it came out after we're done writing it, but I just love it. And there's just so many reasons I do. So my example is Bud Light and how it protects its trademark by going medieval, right? So what happened is a smaller competitor to Bud Light, their name is Modest Brewing Company. They actually made a new brew. It's around like the middle of this year. I think it was back in summer. It was called Dilly Dilly Mosaic Double IPA, right? And so whether they knew or they didn't, I think in the beginning when they came up with it, they probably didn't necessarily pay that much attention to the fact that this was trademarked, but they came up with a limited run. And so Anheuser-Busch, you know, who owns Bud, actually found out. So instead of being a total jerk, which I will have to tell you, I'm so tired of companies being jerks to each other, even like especially within the same industry, they actually, here's what they did. They sent them a cease and desist in a letter in a just an amazing way. So they sent this the guy who was dressed up as a king's servant back in medieval times, and he came into the lobby, into the headquarters, and rolled out this parchment paper with all the official importance, and he ran this hilarious letter by the order of the king. You know, it was pretty much a funny written cease and desist letter, and it was so cute, it was so hilarious. But not instead of just giving him a threat, it was funny written in a funny way, and they've given him two Super Bowl tickets for two of their best employees, and joined the company invited the company to join them in watching the game. So it was just so brilliantly executed, Nick. And I love the execution. I love that it got press for them and for their competitor, who could easily, honestly, have been absolutely crushed. They would probably crush their business by an official lawsuit or whatever that is, right? The consequences could have been bad, but instead they elevated the industry, they elevated the competition, they got press for both of the companies. Yep. They've done it in such an elegant way. It was amazing. That's one of my favorites.
I love that.
That's a great example. I have one as well, not quite maybe as humorous on the end of that. I think it was incredibly inspiring to me. And it's actually called The Land of Land Rovers. And Land Rover recently celebrated their 70th anniversary. And they brought to life a remarkable and true customer story that comes from this remote village in the Indian Himalayas, which they're calling appropriately the Land of Land Rovers. Because what the video they created, it tells the true story of a fleet of meticulously maintained 1957 Land Rover vehicles, and they climbed the most treacherous mountain roads in the world. And it's actually the only way a lot of these small villages in the Indian Himalayas actually have contact with the outside world. It's how people get from one village to the other. It's how supplies get there. But, you know, when you see the cinematography of this video and you see the sheer treachery of the roads that these guys are driving, it's remarkable. And without actually selling the vehicle, it really speaks to the credibility of kind of what Land Rover vehicles are capable of, and capable of over time as well, right? And I think, to me, what really struck me is it's just such a brilliant example and reminder that the best stories are not your own always. They're actually those of your customers and your fans. And again, this is one of those once in a lifetime brand stories, right? But when you find those, you truly touch people's hearts. And, you know, those are the stories you as a brand really want to invest in bringing to life and really prioritizing them over kind of more of the overt product messages. Because Land Rover could have been like, look how great our vehicles are, look what they can do. But they chose more of kind of the human interest storytelling element. And I think it resonates that much more as a result of it.
I love that. Great example, and great example of a smile and a story along the way as well. Where can folks go to learn more about the book and who you are and what you do?
Well, we each have a website, ekaterinawalta.com and jessicajolia.com. You can find the book anywhere, in stores on Amazon and in your local store. I think and Amazon is selling right now, and the stores are going to carry the book starting November 5th. That's our official launch date. And so that's, you know, and we're all on social, right, Jess? You can pretty much connect with us.
And I'm at Savvy Bostonian because I'm still a proud Bostonian forever. So,
awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Ekaterina, Jessica, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you for having us, Nick.
Thank you for having us.
And a reminder, if you heard something that you liked on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.